The yellow flag has been shown. The red flag is being taken away. The lights will go to red. For the last time this season, the lights change.
Away they go. Good start from Danny Pedrosa. When we never said that.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 305 for Wednesday, the 8th of February, 2012. My name is Jim Race. I am here in California. With us over in the northern part of Wales is one Martin Darlington. How are you, Martin?
I'm very well, thank you, Jim. Yes, I'm looking forward to what's going to be a bit of an ad lib show, I think.
I think so too. Not a ton of news right now, kind of in a bit of a testing lull, but to make sure that we still keep you guys out there entertained, we do have two very good interviews. We're still on a roll with those. First one we'll play for you will be Chris Pike. He is the 2012 crew chief for Jonathan Ray of the Tenkata World Superbike team, and always nice to talk to him. Last time I talked to him was at the Isle back in June last year. Also, Jeremy McWilliams, former MotoGP in World Superbike, BSB, AMA. He's done it all. He's got a lot of stuff that he's doing right now, and I'm looking forward to it.
I think as well, isn't Jeremy the last Brit who led a MotoGP race?
That I don't know, but it's a very interesting question. I'm sure somebody out there will fill us in.
I'm pretty sure he is, but I might be guessing.
good trivia question. Before we carry on further, this is going to be a little wimpy, folks, because it's not my traditional Foster's accoutrement, but oh God, that was weak.
I've got nothing, but hang on. I might be able to slurp some Guinness. There you go.
Oh, as usual, we're at full form. Do want to thank everybody for their feedback last week on from what we talked about last week on both the audio issues as well as the show length.
We had some really good feedback. We had some really good banter flying.
Oh yes,
we had some very interesting points made, and we had Keith. KEAF sent us the picture that I think a lot of people have probably seen, joining in on the ribbing we got about Casey and being Casey bashers. With the picture of the crying baby next to the HRC, and I thought, yes, that's quite funny. Right up to the point you actually meet Casey, and he says, "Oi, I saw your picture."
Yeah.
We had an awful lot of feedback about my kind of fairly rash prediction that Rossi wouldn't win a dry race. But we also had quite a lot of agreement. Quite a lot of people saying, yeah, it's a shame, but I suspect you're right. And we also had, and I'm trying to find the email and who it was from. Someone pointed out, and I do apologize because I can't actually find it at the moment, saying, why are you saying CRT will be better and we're better off without a grid? I mentioned a couple of times apparently about, I don't want a grid of 12 riders. And I do apologize to whoever it was who emailed in. But they were saying, well, the TV only really covers the front 6 to 8 anyway. And why is this a problem? For me, it is a problem. And I think CRT is the lesser of the evils available to us to, and this is pretty much what I said in the reply, to try and make a spectacle, to try and make an entertaining but still valid spectacle of motorcycle racing. And yeah, okay, at first it's going to be a race within a race, but the CRT have got so much potential for development and expansion, far more than I know the teams have gone to thousands and it's new, so there is some development potential there, but nowhere near as much as the CRTs have got. So I would reckon by mid-season we'll see them starting to overlap with the satellite bikes. Some of the satellite bikes already overlap with the factory bikes. So now I think it's the way to go. So that was my riposte. Well,
there's also the, you know, the whole point that Dorna has a legal obligation to the FIM to supply a certain number of bikes to a MotoGP grid.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've just found it. Sorry, it was Mike Moynihan. So, Mike, thank you very much. It was a really well-written and very well-argued position. And he did kind of say, look, I'm being a bit of a devil's advocate here. And we love that. And it generates conversation, as Mike said. So good shout. Just not one I agree with.
Well, and I agree with you, Martin. I'd rather see more bikes on the grid, even if we see it a little bit spread out right now. I remember what one thing Mike said in there is 99% of the people watch races on TV. And while that may be true, the 1% or whatever that actual figure is when they are at the races don't want to sit there for 2 minutes not seeing anything occur. No. And so having additional bikes on the grid does make for, to me, some more entertainment, more intrigue, more drama, even if there are bikes further down in the field that are having a battle for me with the amount of time that I do spend at the racetrack. I want to see the battles all over the circuit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And I mean, when we did see the 15 and 16 bike grids this last year, when we had riders injured and there was no replacements available, I cringed. It was just like, oh God, this is, it looks when they take the TV shot down the grid pre-start, it looks a bit pathetic. And you just think, you know, it's easy for the Formula One cars, you know, because they're two abreast and they go back for miles, even when there's only 17, 18 of them. But for bikes, it just looks so insignificant. And I thought, no, I want to see more bikes. I quite agree. No, you don't want to get a bunch of, you know, cruiser riders and just chuck them in the back so you've got the big looking grid and then see them lapped on, you know, the third or fourth lap. But, you know, no. I think we've addressed it.
Yeah, I think so too.
We need more numbers. Yeah. Yes. But the absolutely. Rossi banter was good.
All the Rossi banter that was going on in Martin's and my discussion last week that kind of spread onto Twitter. You've been more involved in that than I have, but there was some great conversation this morning about the whole thing, and I'm still sticking to my at least two races, wet or dry. Doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, we had people saying four races. We had and we had some exalted personalities joining. And it was Ian Wheeler and Duncan Bishop, and such exalted people were giving their opinion. PI seems to be coming up as quite a strong tip for Rossi to win. And as Jules and I hit back with was, well, I'm going to say Casey Stoner has dominated at that track for the last couple of years. Can't see why they'd think PI. Jules suggested Sachsenring, Le Mans possibly. A Mugello, I don't know. I know it's the home track and he's done well there in the past, but, you know, not the last couple of years. And again, pushing too hard, trying to keep up, trying to make the times when he broke his leg. I don't know. I know I'm sticking by. I think, as we were saying, that this isn't, we're not talking about the Rossi of years ago. We're not talking about anything but the Rossi of now. And I think there's too many riders, Lorenzo and Stoner consistently, who are quicker than Rossi. And on their day, Spies and Pedrosa can also join that club, who are as quick or quicker. Not all the time, but you stick them on equal equipment. And I'm not sure that Rossi will be at the front now. Yep. And that might be heresy to those who in whose eyes he can do no wrong. It's not doing wrong. He's just getting old. Or older.
I don't know. I think everybody is right straight back into what happens every year, which is making shit up before the season starts because we really got no idea.
Absolutely. And as I said to, I think it was Ian Wheeler, we got into a discussion and I said, you know, I'm always ready to be proved wrong. It normally happens at some stage. When it does, I just hope that no one remembers.
Well, that's the fun thing about making predictions is if you're right, you can pat yourself on the back and nobody will remember if you're wrong. So.
Well, that's how the British press have operated for years. And I include MCN in that as well as all our red top tabloids. They make a wild prediction. If it doesn't come off, they think, well, no, who's going to remember that?
Yeah, exactly.
Particularly the further in the future it is, the better. And I've got till next Valencia for people to forget that I'd said Rossi wouldn't win a race.
Although
I'm sure, although we did hear, and it's been quiet. We did hear from Big John Hart, and we haven't given John a shout out for ages, mainly because he hasn't bothered to be in touch with us. but John said, I'm not going to go up against you with the double or quits beer because it's getting to sort of brewery levels now. So we're going to have to think of a new one.
All right. Then that can bring me into something. And then I think right after we talk about this, we can go ahead and run one of these interviews. We are going ahead to do the Motopod Listeners League at MCN for their fantasy road race stuff. We did that last year. It was a load of fun. I don't know. We had over 100 people.
It's well over 100. I think we were pushing for 200 at one stage.
Yeah, it was a big league. We will have a link as to where you need to go. The pin for our league is 48, which means that I got it in pretty early.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're already getting people signing up for that. It's a lot of fun. Just to reiterate for those of you that don't know, you pick, you have a 10 million euros or pounds? I forget. Is it euros or 10 pounds?
10 million pounds. Rider is given a nominal value.
Right. Each rider is given a nominal value, kind of based on a little bit of prediction.
It's expectation and experience combined, isn't it?
Exactly. And then you pick two riders from MotoGP, two riders from World Superbike, and two riders from BSB. So if you're not familiar with BSB, it's a lot of fun anyway, because it's still a very good series, and there are, you know, ultimately ways you can keep up with it one way or another, either through the website or if you have the opportunity to watch it live or online. So we encourage you to join up. Big fun. You were leading nearly the damn whole thing for a few rounds there, and I was quite impressed. And I wasn't. I was way down in the pack. I was a CRT rider. I did eventually come back a little bit as the year went on, but not to any of my prior glory. And we will also do, of course, the same one at rideon2.com that we do the picks there. And so that'll be big fun once again this year. So that information.
Have you amended it to?
Haven't decided. Haven't decided yet.
Right.
We'll see what we're going to do. I kind of like the traditional part. Jules and I'll have to talk about that and see if we want to make a change. And actually, we'll have to do it with the originator because I'm not sure either of us know the code well enough to make that sort of change to it. Because part of it is automated. Part of it isn't. And a big part of it isn't. And that's actually getting the whole thing set up. All right. Before we head into the main topics, that being MotoGP, World Superbike. Let's go ahead and run the Jeremy McWilliams interview. I really enjoyed doing that. I did that on Saturday morning. Same thing with Chris Pike early, and I normally don't do that, so I might sound a little different, either tired or a little groggy, but hopefully it will come across. I think the information that we had was great. And they're a little shorter, maybe just because of that, so let's roll those. Jim Race here for Motopod with Jeremy McWilliams, a former, I can't even say former motorcycle racer because you're not, dude. You're still back on. In fact, you are going to be about very shortly in the Northwest 200, the oldest guy ever to start one, I think, aren't you?
No, really? That's news to me. Now, it's not news to me that I'm starting in the Northwest, but it's news that I'll be the oldest racer. But yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised, actually. You know, I'm actually wondering what I'm doing, going back and having a go at it at 47. I'll be around about 48 years, I think, whenever I take part. But it's one of the things I never got a chance to do, and it's one thing that I think I've missed out on. And it looks like a fun road race. It's one I've been going to for many years and enjoyed it, so it would be nice to do it from the other side of the fence for once.
Is there a part of you that says, okay, well, if I run well in the Northwest 200, that I'll bop over to the island for the TT as well?
No, not at all. No, it's my local race. You know, I live about an hour away from the Northwest 200, and I don't for one minute think that I could go and learn the TT, and I've got no desire to go and learn the TT yet. It's another great race, and it's one I've been to. Started going about 4 or 5 years ago with Renz, and it is an incredible race, and it would take much too much time, I think, for me to learn it at this stage in my career. You know, my career's, you know, well and truly sort of finished. I just go along and do take part in races that I want to do now, just for a bit of fun, really.
What team are you running on, and what kind of bike?
I'm running with Ryan Farquhar's KMR team, which is a little 650 twin. So I thought that would be pretty easy to run on rather than jump on. I certainly no desire to jump on a superbike or something that's a bit of a hassle around there. I think it's easier to jump on something that's like a 650 twin, which is the new class at the Northwest 200. I think they've also got the class at the Alaman TT races this year as well.
Yep.
Basically, I wrote for him at Bishop's Court at the end of the year last year in the Sunflower race, and I got a win on it from, you know, basically first time on, and I found it quite a lot of fun to run. Actually, I had quite a lot of fun to ride, and I think that will be an ideal bike to learn the Northwest on.
I'm assuming that's a SB 650, right?
It's actually a Kawasaki 650.
Oh, really? Okay, so you're on the Kawi. Neat. Which is actually a more difficult bike to tune and actually put parts together for, so that's a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, well, he's been making these bikes, and he's won, I don't know how many road races he's won on his one already. He's won every one, I think, that he's taken part in.
Yeah.
And, he does a really good job. You know, it's not a standard bike. Obviously, there's a fair bit of work in getting it to the state of tune that he gets it in. You know, it's a complete new front end on it, and you know, obviously forks and shock, and quite a bit of tuning. You know, it turns into probably a 12 or 13,000 pound bike, I believe.
Yeah. Yep. So just to fill everybody in, so that I don't leave anybody behind out there that is listening to the show, Jeremy McWilliams spent an awful lot of time in the GP paddock, 93 through like 2007, I think, with some fairly history teams, Yamahas, Hondas, TSRs, Aprilias. You were on the Proton for a couple of years, Aprilia once again, back on the Proton, and finally with the ill-fated Ilmor. Give me your impressions of all that time that you spent in that paddock, sir. That was a long run.
Yeah, I suppose it was it was longer than I ever thought I'd get out of it, so I certainly no regrets. Very, very lucky to spend as many years as I did racing at world level and thoroughly enjoyed it. I suppose it's like anything, you know, when you're there, you wonder just how long you can keep going, how long you can maintain, I suppose, you know, the fitness without picking injuries up that otherwise put you, can put an end to the career. I was pretty lucky at it. Didn't pick any injuries up until about 2007, actually, when I rode the Ilmor.
Yep.
Broke a leg and came back again okay, but that was probably the worst time, you know, breaking a leg and trying to get fit again to get back on the bike, and then the time I got back on, the team folded anyhow. But yeah, some great memories from it, some good fun times running with Kenny Roberts. That was probably the best part.
Oh yeah. I bet.
Yeah, it was fun. He's a character. Yeah.
There's nobody that walks away from a close relationship with Kenny Roberts without having a whole bunch of good stories that they can take with them. Most of which you will probably take to your grave because you can't tell them all.
Well, that's about right. I can't really say I couldn't talk about much of them even here on the podcast. But yeah, I mean, all good innocent fun. All a lot of fun with the team and Kenny. And I went to Sturgis with them, and that was quite fun, actually, riding Harley Davidson's up there in Sturgis with him and his friends. Really, really good. Met some great people there. I've got some great memories of most of my career. I can't really think of a bad one, to be honest.
Yep. Well, I mean, 176 races in the GP paddock is not something to be overlooked by anybody's imagination. Unfortunately, only one win back in 2001 on the Aprilia. Six podiums, not bad at all. Three poles, very well done. You stepped off after that, and you kind of, I think you had some world endurance thoughts, but then again, you ended up over here in the States racing one of the craziest bikes we all were all kind of looking at, which was the Buell XBRR. And I actually got to see you on that, I think twice, at least once at my home circuit, that being Infineon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good. Again, good times racing for Eric and the team. And we did our best on the bike, and we were trying to develop a little bit. It was just before, the new water-cooled bike came out, so we were racing that old air-cooled bike and had it at the Daytona. Actually, one of the funnest times, I think, was basically trying to get it to the finish line at the Daytona. Mm-hmm. We didn't quite manage it, but it was, we were on the second row and had a bit of fun during the race, line sort of sixth or seventh during the race, and then we had a mechanical put us out, but we were the last bike running, even though we didn't get to the finish, we all enjoyed just putting the effort into it.
Sure. Infineon is probably reminiscent of someplace like Cadwell or Alton, isn't it?
Yeah, I enjoyed the Infineon track. Actually, you could liken it to a British track, by all means. It's quite a funny track, actually, in some areas in it that weren't perfectly safe. But I think that's what made the track quite fun.
Right.
Lots of tracks actually in the States that I really loved. Barber was another one, and I've been to quite a few of them over there, but yeah, Infineon was a fun track, lovely part of the world.
Sure, absolutely. And so, what are you up to now? tell me what trouble you're about to get yourself into for this coming season. I want to know the whole story.
Well, I've just come back from Australia. I just landed back a couple of days ago. I was over taking part in the Philip Allan Classic International.
I know. And in fact, I should point out that if we roll this interview into next week, we have an interview with you from Phillip Island that a gentleman named Phil Hall did with you, who is kind of a fan of the show and an affiliate, if you will, down there, that got an interview with you down there. So I've already heard that, and I heard that yesterday.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
No, it's something I've taken part in for the last couple of years. I have to say, it's nice to have invitations to go and do these things, and that's one race. It's a hell of a race. It's a hell of a race circuit. I think my favorite circuit. And we were lucky enough to get the win again, but you've got to race in four races over the weekend.
Yep.
And the points tally then is the important thing. So unfortunately for Steve Martin and Sean Giles, they had a mechanical in the last race, and that put them out and handed me the win, so to speak. So yeah, it was fun. It was a lovely place to go. Unfortunately, I could only go for 5 days because of just other things. We had a family bereavement just before that, and things that really knocked it back a bit. But I didn't want to let the team down. I wanted to get down there anyway because they were all there, and it took quite a while to get the bikes out. It's quite a cost to get the bikes all the way from the UK.
Sure.
Over, and I was racing that Suzuki, the Harris, that F1 Harris, at the XR69 of Roger Winfield's.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll probably go back and defend that again next year. For this year, the next thing on the cards is I'm off to Cartagena at the weekend to work with Jed Mitcher. Just joined the team. It's a lovely little track, and we're going testing before the season kicks off. He's racing World Supersport for a Russian team that I do a little bit of work with called Raven Moto. He's off to, basically, we've got four riders. We've got Robin Mulhauser, who's going to race on Superstock 600. We've got two Russian guys who I worked with last year, Oleg and Eric, who will both again race in World Supersport. And then we got Jed Metcher joining us, who's real young, talented kid. He's just won the Superstock 600. But that's the championship that runs alongside World Superbike. So he's done a great job, and we've taken him on board, and we hope he'll do great things on a super sport bike. So that's in the meantime, that fills up quite a bit of my calendar during this year. But I also do quite a bit of work with KTM.
Yep.
In 2009, I started with them on the IDM bike, and that's the German championship on the RC8. We've done a little bit of development with them, and from then it's built into something more. So this year I'll do a little bit more with KTM. We've just got an agreement with them to supply the bikes for the European Junior Cup, which is...
That's what I heard. I heard that same thing. I was talking to Simon Crafar, who kind of overruns that whole thing and acts as a mentor. And he said they moved from the Ninja 250s to the big KTMs. And I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, they're on the going around on the 690 Dukes, the new one, the 2012 Duke, and it's a lovely little bike. I was doing a bit of how it came about. I was doing a bit of photography with them for the brochures and some video. I couldn't get over just how nice the bike was. We were running about on roads in Spain. Lovely little back roads, you know, switchbacks, and the most perfect part of Spain, up in the mountains. Lovely, you know, beautiful sunshine, and we had the opportunity to ride all the bikes. But this little 690 kept coming up, and it's just one of the easiest bikes ever to ride. So I think it'll fit in very well for the kids, because it's for 14-year-old up to 19, I believe. And
we're out.
you can't ride it. I'm looking off. I get to test it next week at Cartagena. Also, they bring the bike down to see if we can put a fast lap on it, just see what it's capable of.
Yeah.
And you know, before the season kicks off, to see if there's anything else it needs. KTM have done a great job with putting power parts on. You know, it'll run with the Akolovich exhaust and some nice little footrest and power parts that KTM supply with it. So the bikes will look really cool, and I think the kids will love them.
Yeah.
And you know, it's 75 horsepower, and it's about 140 something kilos. So it's, yeah, it'll make an ideal little race bike.
And certainly a step above the Ninja 250, although that was also a brilliant platform for developing racers. The KTM RC8 and KTM had originally, about 2 weeks ago, withdrawn from their entry from AMA Superbike here, and then have just within the last couple of days re-entered again. So I'm thrilled to see that they're going to be back here battling in AMA Superbike, because I think it is a valid platform.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. I mean, that bike is very special. You know, if you may not know, but it won the German Championship last year.
Sure.
You know, beating all the rest of the factories, and they've done a great job with it. I think with AMA, it'll do very, very well. The bike as it is, you know, would fit perfectly into even the British Championship, and yeah, I'd love to see them come to the British Championship as well.
Yep.
But you know, maybe that's for the future.
Well, yeah, and interesting trying to throw a control ECU and put that into an Evo sort of, you know, class there. You said something that I thought was interesting. You said that PI was your favorite track, and so perhaps one of the reasons why the Northwest 200 might suit you is, in a way, it is sort of a PI-type track, and then it's very, very wide open.
Well, exactly. Yeah, that's one thing I love about those fast tracks, you know, that particularly Phillip Island. There's nothing like Phillip Island for, you know, that 130-mile-an-hour first turn entry, you know, turn threes. You've got Hayshed, you know, fourth gear, right? It's rather special in that way, and I think that's one thing that, you know, I should fit in well. I hope that I can take the Northwest for the fast sections in the Northwest. But you know, remember, the Northwest has changed quite a bit over the years. They've now put in some of the slower chicanes, which so there's a lot of brake work as well, which used to be basically wide, flat open everywhere. But they've changed it a little bit just to help with safety. But I think I'll still enjoy the fast sections, if not.
Have you run any laps there, or is this going to be your virgin experience?
Yeah, never been there on the track. I've been there many times around the track watching it. Ever since I was, in my teens, we always went up to watch it. And lately I've been, just because I've got friends there, when I'm not racing or not doing anything, we always make a point of going up for the weekend. So it's going to be quite different. I'm going to have to rely on, my teammate Ryan Farquhar, or maybe call on Steve Plater, as he's a sort of a writer correspondent now, and just to take me around and show me. So one of the funny things actually is I've been told that as a novice I'll be wearing a big pink vest as well.
So
there you go. That's the first for me. I've got to be the oldest novice coming to the track, as you say.
I think we have to make sure that we see some of those photos on Twitter. So did you and Ryan chat a bit when you were down at PI for the classics about the Northwest 200? Or were you just focused on what was going on down there?
Well, I think that's how it kicked off, to be honest. We spoke about this about a year ago. I took Ryan, obviously, as a teammate, you look out for each other, and we were talking about the track and what works at Phillip Island, and Ryan was, I suppose, struggling a little bit to get his head around just the speed of the place and how to put a fast lap time in. And of course, once I'd qualified it on pole, he'd sort of said, right, okay, McWilliams, you know your way around here. I'm going to have to show you how to get around a road race sometime. And he was trying to talk me into the Manx, which I was never going to do. And We've sort of agreed on this on the Northwest. So it's nice that I'm running on one of his bikes. He's excited about that, and he's got a young rider, Jamie Hambleton, as well. There's going to be three of us on the grid, and possibly he was talking to Michael Rutter. I'm not sure if Michael's going to be on one of the bikes or not, but there might be as many as four of these little 650 twins in KMR colours.
That would be badass. I mean, I think the 650 twins, regardless of Kawi or Suzuki, are a very, very interesting platform, not only for development, and there is a lot of development that's been done to them from the aftermarket standpoint, but a very interesting platform to bring new racers into, as well as very, very experienced racers.
Sorry, you were going to say very, very old racers, weren't you?
No, I wasn't.
No, I mean, it really looks like it is going to be a great platform, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think it's going to be very cool. And I think it's very cool that they actually have that same class that's going to be appearing at the TT this year. And I know that it actually generated a ton of excitement, because over here in the States, the 650 Twins platform is huge. Very, very huge. And we have what we call F4, we have 650 twins, we have 650 superbike. It is big over here, and there are a lot of guys that are pushing hard to get over to the TT, which I kind of all warned them. It's like, maybe go to the Northwest first.
But, yeah, that'll be a good idea, actually.
Yeah,
that certainly would. I think a lot of people use the Northwest as a preparation for the TT.
Exactly. Well, not only do you get your equipment over there, but you also kind of learn the land. I spent the whole fortnight this last June over at the TT for the first time, and it is a learning experience. And that was just as a journalist, not even as a racer. Very, very interesting stuff. So I'm thrilled. How much fun, and I know you did, how much fun did you have down at the Classics, dude? That must have been a total kick in the ass.
It really is. It's an incredible event. You wouldn't, once you've been there, you wouldn't miss it. And there's actually a bit of a push to get some American riders over next year. I know that Jason Pridmore, I'm following him on Twitter, and he'd said that he'd be really interested in taking part. And I think Steve Martin and his team are going to try and make that happen. So we're going to try and bring a little bit of a stronger British team to it next year. We want McGuinness there, or one of the other riders. I'm going to talk Neil Hodgson into it. Neil's still going to be very, very quick. And because the Australians have got such a strong team, we need to be bringing riders from America and England, wherever, any other part of the world, that because it's a team event, you've got three teams, you've got Australia, the UK team, and then the rest of the world. So it'd be quite interesting if we can attract two more American riders to it.
I agree, and I may be able to help facilitate that. Not myself. I'm 2 years older than you, and I think I've officially retired, but I know a few guys that I might be able to talk into coming down, especially if it is, as some have said, sort of expenses paid jaunt. And certainly, if that's the case, regardless of what beautiful machinery, and my God, there were some beautiful bikes down there. Or people are going to be riding on just the challenge and the spirit and the camaraderie of running it is very, very cool.
Yeah, just to warn them before they come down that these guys at the front, like Steve and Giles, and Josh Brooks was riding this year. Josh, unfortunately, crashed out, but or I think he'd have been right at the very front, but the lap times are pretty incredible. You know, they're into the 38s now.
I wouldn't be sending back markers, my friend.
No, I'm just saying that it's a great event, but it's also really, really hotly contested. You know, red hot pace, but I think that's what makes it good. You know, makes those there's many, many classes, but the international class itself is just a real hot pace, and I suppose that's what makes it such a great class to watch. But yeah, I'm hopefully be there. Hopefully we can do the triple. It'd be lovely if we can go and do it again, but we'll see how I wear over this year.
I think I could talk guys like, say, Josh Hayes or Jamie Hacking guys like that to come down. You know, actually, what you should do, or somebody should do, is get Maladen to stop flying his freaking plane around Australia and come out and run the classics and kick some ass. He probably would.
Yeah, well, he would. I mean, if anybody's going to kick ass, it's going to be Matt. Yeah. I'd love to see, you know, any of those guys, you know, Josh or anyone come down to that. And I think they'd thoroughly enjoy it. You know, it's a time to sort of, you know, okay, we take the racing very seriously, but we also relax a little bit before and afterwards.
Yeah.
So, great place to do that. It's a good place to just to kick back and take a couple of days. The weather's it's perfect. When we were there, it was about 32, 33 degrees.
So was there a good post-race blowout? Did you guys have a raging party?
Well, always, yeah. That's the main thing. Yeah. Best not bring any teetotalers. there is always a barbecue or something or all that's going on. There's a great award ceremony directly afterwards, and there's a bit of banter, and that sort of starts the evening off well. And we just as I say, everybody hangs about and has a few beers afterwards. It was really good fun.
Cool. And then you obviously had the interminable flight home back to a frozen winterland, didn't you?
Yeah, unfortunately, I did. I had to come straight back again, and I'm doing bits and pieces here that I had to be home for, or I would have taken a week there. I wish. I keep saying this, and hopefully next year if we do it again, I can take a week or two. And basically, I love Australia. You know, get up around. I have some friends up in Sydney and some in Perth. Maybe get some time and go and see them next year.
There you go. Cool. Well, I want to wish you the best of luck in the Northwest 200, and I hope everything goes well leading up to that and leading through it and in your results. I don't want to take up too much of your time, sir.
Thanks, Jim. That's it. Hello to everybody, and maybe see you at Dundee Island next year.
Absolutely. It's a possibility. If I can really work things out, I will actually come over for the Northwest 200 and then get Whittem, who has promised to fly me over to the island.
You're a brave man getting him with him. You're a real brave man.
I am a brave man. and then fly me back after the end of the fortnight. So we'll have to see. I really do. I do want to come to a Northwest 200. So we'll see if that happens. You know what, Jeremy? Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks. Okay, Jim. Speak soon.
All right. Cheers, mate.
All right. Many thanks to Jeremy for doing that with us, for taking the time. And I thought that was some pretty cool info, and just pleased to be able to have that conversation. Now, we have had, we already know, obviously, we had the first Sepang test. We had the first CRT to test. Sepang being both a mix of factory teams and some CRT teams. We had CRT bikes at Valencia. Bikes are once back again at Valencia right now, that being Moto 2 and Moto 3. Today did start out damn cold. And I think the high there was 10 centigrade, which is not a whole lot in Fahrenheit either.
No.
And so for about the first half of the day, not a lot of people went out. But in the end, people realized they had to get out. And so we've got some interesting times and a little bit of news from there, but we're probably not going to go into it in too much depth, because really for them, it is kind of the official day one.
Yeah, we had, this is the thing, that the point that, going back to Ian Wheeler again, he made, there's no official timing.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Sepang, and he said it's not exactly the best way to promote pre-season interest and get everyone, you know, buzzing and talking, but if you dig deep enough times do emerge.
Some of them actually match up with each other.
Yeah, some of them actually agree.
Yeah.
The Azifani reported via Twitter that the Moto 3 riders' unofficial times, Cortesi was fastest with a 1:41, and that was nearly a second clear of Faubel and Montoya. Not all teams posted times. We do hear that 1:41, and we'd need to check this out, is nearly 2 seconds slower than the 1:25 lap record pace. But then that's the fastest ever 1:25 circuit. This is the first time the guys have been out on the track with the Moto 3s for an official test. And it was, as Jim said, very cold. So maybe we shouldn't read too much into that. Interestingly, though, on the Moto 2 riders who went out, Scott Redding was 0.2 under the official Moto 2 lap record, which was set by Carol Abraham in 2010, last year's race being damp. So no one broke any records there. Paul Espargaro was 0.6 slower. And then there's a bunch of people, you know, coming behind that, mm-hmm. with a variety of times. Iannone, Thomas Luthi, Esteve Rabat, Max Neukirch, and there's some fairly familiar names. Tony Elias was 11th for Aspar. Nico Tirol was 19th. Bradley Smith was 14th. But, I mean, these guys, they're working stuff out. They're on new bikes.
Absolutely.
Loads of them have changed chassis. So, yeah. We want to read too much into it because, you know, we're bored and we've been starved of bike racing. So we're going to, but this, you've got to look at it and think, yeah, it doesn't really make it. You know, it's not telling many stories.
Yep, exactly. It will be interesting to see what happens over the next 2 days, because I think that's one thing that I actually found enlightening about Sepang was the advancements that the teams made over those days. So if the weather either cooperates or gets better, we're going to see the times drop. We're going to see a few interesting things happen. I just want to think they were very wise to stay probably inside with that cold of a circuit, simply because nobody wants to get hurt when they're going out on unfamiliar machinery or machinery that's had a lot of changes since the prior season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think if we get decent weather, supposedly the forecast is likely to improve over the next 2 days. Whether it's going to get warm enough to represent anything like season temperatures, we don't know. But then, I mean, Valencia, as I found out to my cost, can be cold when the race happens at the beginning of November. If we get more reasonable temperatures, then we should get a better idea. But like you say, it's more the progression of each individual over the 3 days than necessarily how they do in comparison to each other.
Yep, I agree. It will be, you know, we're getting into the thick of testing now. And so between now and actually, frankly, we're getting in the thick of things, period, because we've got real racing starting up in a week and a half or 2 weeks, something like that. It's coming up. And so we're going to have a ton of news, and we're going to have more news than you guys can handle, probably knowing us. And so for the time being, this being, you know, day one of Moto 2 and Moto 3, we'll just kind of leave it at that and see what we get over the next couple of days and probably chat about it next week as well.
No, absolutely.
Yep. What else?
Well, we there was a lot of speculation today, was kind of grew out of the Rossi, will he win a race, won't he, and who's the competition. Duncan Bishop, Spanish-based MotoGP, bike racing and football journalist. Duncan was saying the thing that, you know, the curveball that always gets thrown in is injuries. And mm-hmm. how often do we have a season where none of the top riders either get injured or get ill, you know, develop a lactose intolerance or whatever.
Let me ask you a question, Martin.
Mm.
What was the last season that you can remember that Pedrosa came in healthy?
Well, last season he came in healthy.
Uh-oh.
And then promptly got injured. But you remember, yeah, the beginning of last season, beginning of 2011, people were saying, you know, Lorenzo had broken his hand in that mini-moto race with Carlos Checa.
Right.
Dovi had an injury. Valentino came in with a shoulder injury, which still hadn't completely healed. Casey, we weren't sure about because, you know, the lactose intolerance. Yes, he'd come back at the end of 2010, but no one was quite sure. So there was a lot of, you know, people. And Pedrosa was one we're thinking, no, this guy's, he's sorted, he's on it. And then he promptly went and hurt himself. Or am I thinking about 2010?
No, it was
2010, wasn't it? He came in uninjured.
Yep.
That's right, because at the beginning of last season, he still had the aftermath of the Motegi crash.
Exactly. But, so if we also look at what we're looking at right now, which is we've got Hayden coming in right after if you think about it, this doesn't bode very well for Factory Corsa, but Rossi a day or two ago got a rod taken out of his leg, which is probably a good thing. And then Nicky Hayden had shoulder surgery with Dr. Ting in California. Now, both of those are corrected. This may be a little bit late for Nicky. I'm sure that Valentino's probably going to heal up pretty quickly because that's a relatively simple process, and that should be fine. But I will be very interested to see what those guys can do at the forthcoming test. You know, Marquez, by the way, is sitting this test out. You already mentioned that because of his vision, the Valencia test. So we do have some injuries that are going on.
That's worrying, Marquez. And someone pointed out it's a similar, or the cause of the injury was a similar impact to that which ended a boxer's career. And I'm trying to think which boxer it was. But it's like, ooh.
Yeah.
You know, that because that is one talented kid. That you look at him and you think there's a potential future world champion. Now, there's lots of people that said about who never become, and there's some people it's not said about who do become. But
right,
he is one of those that we look at the way we did Rossi when he arrived in 125s and 250s, and you think, yeah, okay, yeah, this is the real deal.
So the talk that you guys had been chattering about, I guess, on Twitter probably, the one thing that I thought was kind of interesting was one of the people that was tipped to maybe be waiting in the wings was Alvaro Bautista. And then you and I had a conversation before the show, which I guess we should pop out there, which is I pointed out that Gresini was going with Showa suspension this year, which is unusual because pretty much the entire MotoGP paddock has been on Orleans for a couple of years now. And so that will be also something interesting to watch and see how that shakes out. I think also maybe one of the CRT teams are using Show this year as well. Don't hold me to that, but I think I remember seeing something like that. So
now, is this Honda using Gresini as a test bed to look for an advantage? Because, I mean, I know that suspension isn't as critical as tire choice. Could this be Honda looking for the edge that Ducati looked for with Bridgestone when everyone else was on Michelin?
When you don't have a lot of tire choice, you have to find things elsewhere, don't you? And suspension and tires are basically married. So perhaps they are searching for something, and your point is well taken. They may be well and truly doing that. Showa has not been involved in the premier class for a while, but that doesn't mean that they've been sitting on their laurels, and certainly they supply OEMs with, particularly Honda, with suspension bits for the production bikes. You never know. You never know.
No. And this conversation grew out of speculation that Danny Pedrosa really needs to win the title this year or come damn close to keep his seat, or he'll be dropping down, following Dovi down the prestige rides in future years. Until Jules pointed out that because of the rookie rule, if we're looking at Marquez as the successor, well, if he moves up next year, he has to ride for a satellite team. So maybe Pedrosa has 2 years, unless someone else is waiting in the wings, and that's where Alvaro Bautista's name came into the conversation. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I mean, who else is coming up? Bradle, Stefan Bradle at LCR. He may prove to be absolutely born to ride 1,000cc MotoGP bikes. He's not CRT. He's on a good satellite bike. We know that Lucio can put Lucio Ceccanello, the owner, the eponymous owner of LCR, he can put together a bloody good package. I mean, look what we saw Randy De Puno doing on that 2 years ago.
Right.
And it was only really a really, really unlucky having Mika Kallio run over his leg that kind of halted him just when he was starting to look like he might be on the edge of a podium.
Very true.
Which for a satellite bike is pretty damn good in this day and age. So, yeah, but I do think Pedrosa's got to be looking over his shoulder. And Alberto Puig has got to be stood there thinking, do you know when we came up from 250s and I was given a choice? You can either manage Pedrosa or Stoner. Pedrosa or Stoner. I'm going to go with Pedrosa and drop Casey like a hot potato. Whoops.
Well,
that's
actually,
almost like the guy at Decca who said to the Beatles, no, I'm not going to sign you because I'm not being funny, but the four-piece, you know, band is kind of old hat.
I don't think that's how it actually happened. I'm pretty sure that Casey chose to go with other management because he was involved, obviously, with Alberto Puig for quite some time.
But it's a better story. If you do it the way I do. Never let the truth get... Jim, you want to be a professional journalist. You never let the truth get in the way of a good story. Has MCN taught you nothing?
You've spent too much time in the off-season reading The Sun, haven't you?
I've spent too much time this evening drinking Guinness.
Ah, good point. Okay, that I can understand. This is the difference between when I would do shows at, you know, 10:30 at night my time and you would do them at 6:30 a.m. your time.
I'm coming for the coffee, and yeah, and you're killing some brain cells with Foster's.
Funny. All right. So what I think we should do, and I think that was a sparkling conversation before we over-sparkle ourselves and lose some of you guys, is let's go ahead and run, before we have a very quick chat about World Superbike, the interview with Chris Pike. Once again, Chris is the crew chief for Jonathan Rea for 2012 for Tenkata Squad. And he's heading down with all the rest of the boys right now to Phillip Island. They'll be having a few days of pre-testing, and then they get on with it in a very short period of time. So next week, obviously, we're going to be coming at you guys with some very, very serious anticipation and probably a little bit more news on what's going on there. But let's have a listen with Chris. Hey, this is Jim Race for Motopod with one Chris Pike. And Chris, we haven't talked to you since the Isle of Man last year when you were crew chiefing for Padgetts and running John McGinnis, right?
I wasn't part of the Padgetts team, but I was helping them out at the TT. But yeah, I was John McGinnis's crew chief on the TT Legends bike.
Oh, that's right, that's right. And that was a... shall we say, a rather successful outing?
Yeah. I mean, I owed John a couple, really. You know, we had a bad couple of years up to, by his standards on the superbike, up to last year. And last year we won both of them again, you know, and he won them convincingly as well.
Yeah.
A few people a few people gave him a hard time on the first couple of laps, but over six laps, not many people can beat John there.
No, and you know he carries on. He's had a brilliant outing at Macau as well. I have a very iconic picture that I have of him kind of leaning back against the pit wall at the TT, sitting down with the trophy next to him in the waning sun, and I'll treasure that picture for a long time. And he was great fun to talk to as well.
Yeah, and Jim, I know you were recording that. I just couldn't understand any of that.
I'm sorry.
It's really distorted. Sorry, mate.
Okay. I was saying I have a really iconic, and I can edit this, I have a really iconic photo of him leaning against the pit wall next to his trophy from the TT. And he went on to do very well at Macau as well. So, but you have changed allegiances this year.
Yes, I have. Yeah, I've moved to Tenkata Honda with Jonathan Ray and getting back into World Superbikes. I was in World Superbikes from, basically from 1994 to 2002 with a Castrol Honda HRC squad.
Yep.
So it's nice to go. Yeah, it's nice to be going back to the world scene.
And you just got back from a lovely little jaunt down to island where they have penguins, which is odd, in the middle of Australia.
yeah.
And it sounds like you guys had a pretty good outing. Tell me how your test went with Jonathan and Hiro.
Well, mainly from Jonathan's side, we're sort of just an evolution of the 2011 bike at the moment. We've got some new parts on it. Not all our 2012 parts are on it yet because they're not all ready yet. But we're making progress with it. We're competing on a level playing field, or a more level playing field electronically, and also with suspension as well. We've moved to factory Olin suspension, and obviously electronically it's gone to fly-by-wire throttle and everything, and all the advantages that you can have with a fly-by-throttle we're starting to use now.
I'm assuming you guys are running magnetic Burley like all the top teams are. Is that a direct plug-in with the fly-by-wire on the Fireblade?
It's not magnetic Burley.
Really?
It's PI, and it's very good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, convention sort of says that everybody uses Magneti Morelli, but these PI guys are very clever. They're coming up with some very intelligent strategies that are working, that are making the bike work better.
So
in all aspects.
I'm assuming that as PI has what is sort of known as an up-and-coming company, you guys are getting some very top-level support.
We have Tenkata have a contract with PI Cosworth for development of the electronics. So yeah, we've got their best guys on the case, and that's showing. You know, the level of the electronics is coming up exponentially. It's coming up very quickly.
Are you seeing the changes in leaps and bounds or in small incremental ways?
Initially, in leaps and bounds. I mean, you know, when you consider that before Jonathan had his accident, he was sort of, you know, having a tough time in the championship, wasn't he? He was, struggling to make the top five. But since he came back from injury, obviously the big leap was the fly-by-wire. And since then, we've made, several more steps. It's hard to make the same step again as the fly-by-wire. That was sort of like 0.5 of a second per lap, nearly. So, you know, we're just chipping away at it making the whole thing gradually better.
Cool.
And more refined.
The 2011 to 2012 Fireblade was more of a bold new graphics upgrade than anything else in some ways, but clearly what you guys have as a superbike is, we have to be honest, it's light years away from what you kind of have as a production bike. Have you found some real good steps that you could put forward to the bike?
Well, as a road bike, do you mean?
Well, as a road bike, but obviously as a world-class world superbike.
Well, you know, the bike's had its, weak areas in the past that, we know about that it, it's quite difficult to stop it. You quite often see Fireblades, quite unstable on entry into corners and stuff like that.
Right.
Well, the electronics is helping massively in this area.
Okay. I will extrapolate from that and say that shatter is still a bit of an issue?
No, not so much. No.
No? Okay.
No, we've been to sort of three circuits testing that probably don't chatter that much anyway. So, to say we've cured chatter would be a bit of a big call at the moment. But, it's much less of a complaint than it was, and that'll be down to factory Olin suspension as well as the advance in the electronics.
True. We're looking at what 3 weeks time now. It's not that far off that you guys are going to be on the track in Anger. What are you going to do between now and then?
Well, all the guys are back at the workshop in Holland, and I'm back in the UK. But we're all still communicating and, making test plans and, still trying to push it all forward.
Any more testing plan between now and then, or are you just going straight away?
Say again, sorry, Jim.
Any more? Of course, you're going to be back down at PI for the test prior to the race, but any more testing planned in the interim between now and then?
No, because the bikes are still out there. So,
okay.
we left the bikes after the test. So,
okay.
There's just a crate going from the workshop with a few extra bits and pieces that we need.
All right. Where would you put your confidence level at this point?
Confidence level? We're sort of sailing in the 9 out of 10 range.
Okay.
Yeah, right. We're quite confident. That we've made some big improvements, and we're there to win. We're there to try and win, and that's not being unrealistic. We have a chance of it. The Ducati, of course, is very strong at Phillip Island. That'll take some overhauling, maybe. Winning at Phillip Island is a big call from this, at the moment, but definitely a podium isn't. Getting on the podium is not, that's very achievable.
I wouldn't disagree. I think part of it too is also dependent on what we end up with weather, 3 weeks out. Having the bikes there and, frankly, for you, right now you're back in the UK and it's cold as hell. I know that. You're probably looking forward to get back down to the island again, although it's certainly a long, long flight. You'll be going down a week beforehand, and you get what, 3 days testing the prior week?
There's 2 days testing before the race event.
Okay.
There's an in-front test, in front being the organizers.
Sure.
Just before the first race. So I think I haven't looked at the schedule, to be honest, but I think it's 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon. So, that'll be another 8 hours of track time.
Sure. And frankly, if you guys cannot dial it in that particular time, and in addition to the free practices that you'll have before you guys run for Super Bowl, I think you'll be good. And I know Johnny's pretty much near full healthy at this point. Is he feeling well?
Yeah, no, he's fully fit. He's been doing a lot of cycling. Actually, I think he's been cycling with international level cyclists.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, in Australia. Yeah, so he's managed to get himself in a very good place. So he's all fit and raring to go.
Has Hero as a teammate to Johnny kind of surprised you guys? It seems like he's come in and kind of fit right in.
Yeah, Hero's a professional rider. He hasn't surprised us in any great respect. He's come in, fitted in. He's worked. As far as I know, because I don't work on his side of the garage, but as far as I can see, he's worked in a very definite direction to improve the bike. He has a very focused area that he wants to make better, and the guys are working on it and making it better for him.
Cool. Who do you guys see as, well, I mean, it's fairly obvious, but as the talking, or I'll take it this back, and I'll just ask you as a friend instead of a crew chief, or as somebody that, we hang out on forums together when we're anonymous.
Okay.
Who do you, if you had to make picks this year and you can't count your own rider, who are your picks for the top of the box at the end of the season? And you can pick your own rider. I'll let you do that.
Well, I'd like to think we'll be competing for it. It's a big call to say that we will be on there. We'll have to see how, I think that after 2 days testing at Phillip Island with everybody else, we'll have a much clearer idea of where we actually sit in the pecking order. But you can't take anything away from Carlos and the Ducati the way he won it last year.
Mm-hmm.
He won it as a canter. And we've got to stretch him. We at the moment we haven't even caught him, so stretching him's that's a big ask.
Sure.
So so long as he's still as motivated as ever, and I don't know why he wouldn't be. He's the main man, and then you've got the Aprilia guys.
Sure. Who are
going to be very strong as well. So it's all to play for with them. And I think, I think the BMW is going to make a step forward as well. And that's going to be a bit of a thorn in our side as well.
We may even have a dark horse with the Crescent crew coming in too as well.
Yeah, we may have. It's a big call for them to come in and... John Hopkins is a quality rider, and so is Leon Camier. You saw what John did in BSB last year. He didn't know the tracks, and he came in and he competed at the top in all of them. That's no mean feat in itself.
Sure.
But the team has data for all the circuits. I'm not sure whether the team has data for all the circuits at World Championship level, but I do think... sure, they're going to be competitive, but actually winning a world championship is going to be a big call for those guys first time out.
Sure. I think they may threaten on a bunch of tracks, probably the tighter circuits, I have a feeling. Cool. So are you excited? Are you getting ready and pumped up? And I'm assuming that your loved ones are ready to see you off and not see you for a while.
You know what? I'm really looking forward to it. I've got to work now with some really good people. I've got five people working for me, working for me in the team, like as in data engineers, suspension engineers, and mechanics and everything. And they're all spot on. Really, they're nice people as well as really good at their job. And I left Phillip Island. And for the first time in a long time, I thought, I actually really enjoyed myself there. That was really good. Not that I didn't enjoy myself in the UK, but it was a lot harder work and a lot harder personally on you. It's a nice atmosphere, and it's going well. And obviously I work with Jonathan in in BSB before he went to World Championship, and it's really nice to be involved back with him again and see how he's matured over the years as a person and as a rider. And it's really nice to be involved again.
I guess part of it too is that there are a ton of Brits in World Superbike. You know, you got Jonathan, you've got Eugene, you've got Leon, you've got two Leons. And just there's a bit of a family atmosphere in the paddock from back home, isn't there?
There is a little, yeah. I mean, not only riders, there's quite a few British mechanics that I know in the paddock as well.
Mm-hmm.
There is a bit of a family atmosphere thing going on because, the Bogdanka team, they're called now, aren't they? Well, they're based in the town that I live in as well. So
okay.
all the guys that work there, I'll see them all over the world as well as in the local pub.
Are you like out of Tunbridge area, or you're not up Ireland way, are you?
No, I'm in Louth in Lincolnshire.
Okay, all right. Because I know when I think of PTR, I still think of Tunbridge and the guys that were up that way.
Tunbridge is where Eugene's from.
Right. And then that team actually had a bit of a splintering this year, which I thought was interesting. I know that Phil Marone has gone over to Eugene's squad on Aprilia. Mark Woodage, as you know, Brains, has gone on and formed his own group, and Simon's got a bit of a whole new crew. So, still a bunch of the stalwarts there. A great team, obviously a great team.
Yeah, for sure.
Part of me still thinks that World Supersport, and as a corollary, Moto2 is some of the funnest racing in the world to watch right now.
Yeah, the smaller bikes, there's more people that can ride them to the limit, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
You tend to get sort of closer racing. The guys are feeling very confident on them because, they can ride them at the limit, so they tend to bend them into slightly different shapes than the bigger ones. it can be proper exciting stuff to watch.
So I do have to ask, and I'm going to be disappointed if you, and I think the answer is probably no, but if I'm back at the TT this year, you're not going to be back. You're going to be out doing World Superbike stuff.
I'm missing out on the TT this year. I think it's just after Miller, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It depends. I'll never say never. I might get a chance of a day over there. I'll tell you for why, because a few of the Tenkata guys have never been, and they're expressing an interest. So if they express an interest, I'll go over with them and show them around. But one thing, I've been to the TT for God knows how many years now, and I've never actually seen the bikes out on the track. I've only seen them go past the start-finish straight.
Well, I mean, if there is one place to listen to the bikes go by, listening to them country road is probably the best place ever in the world to listen to a motorcycle go past.
Yeah, apparently about half a mile down the road is about the most exciting place to watch them as well, though, so I wouldn't mind getting a look at that as well.
All right. Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. It's currently 6:19 a.m. here in California. You are much further ahead of me over in the UK. And I need to get my day going. And I appreciate you, Chris, taking the time to talk with us. Let's make sure we have a chat when post-test at PI. And you can maybe fill me in. Maybe you'll actually give me some numbers then, won't you?
The numbers will be there printed out, and I won't be able to argue with them. So.
You did notice I was nice enough not to ask.
Yes, well, I appreciate that. I wouldn't have told you anyway.
I know, of course not. All right, brother, you take care, and we shall talk soon.
Okay, Jim, thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir. Ciao.
Yes, bye.
All right. Many thanks to Chris Pike as well. As I said at the beginning of the show, we had a chat last time at the Isle of Man TT when he was a crew chief for John McGuinness and his spectacular run for that series. And, I'm really kind of starting to bounce on my seat, Martin, for the first race of the year at Phillip Island. It's always a ton of fun.
Absolutely. And I tell you what, we've got some, you look at World Superbike and I feel, I always feel bad about this, that often it produces better races than MotoGP, but because MotoGP is the pinnacle, it just holds your fascination a bit more. So World Superbikes can sometimes slip by, but because they do this brilliant early race and then all bugger off for a month, which is a pain, but we do, they do get our unavoided, undivided attention. And there are some fascinating stories going on there. Carlos Checa, can he do it again? Biaggi being joined by Eugene Laverty on the Aprilia, and Eugene was instantly quicker than Max at their very first test. Leon Haslam and Marco Melandri at BMW, they claim to have sorted out the electronic issues, but I think the two most interesting riders in the same team are going to be Johnny Ray and Hiroshi Ayama. Mm-hmm. I mean, Johnny Ray's reaction apparently when they first ran together was, shit, this kid's fast.
Yep.
I mean, yep. I've picked a team for the Fantasy League, which will no doubt change before the season starts, because you need to, and this is the only top tip I'm giving away, you need to look at the calendar and you need to use the transfer windows. I think Hiroshi is a very, very good tip for a dark horse to get a lot more points than people are giving him credit for or giving him expectation for, judging by how MCN have valued him.
Mm-hmm. That is actually run by a third party, the Fantasy League.
Yeah.
And so I
shouldn't blame MCN for everything.
No. In fact, it was funny because when I was setting up my team yesterday and I was wandering through riders, I noticed that Eugene Laverty's picture was one of some Italian rider that I couldn't place off the top of my head. And I wrote in, I said, the picture that you have for Eugene Laverty is actually not Eugene Laverty. And I got a very nice email when I got up this morning thanking me, and they put a new picture in that was actually Eugene. So
that's fun.
Yeah, and it definitely came from outside MCN. So I think what they do is a hoot. It would be interesting if they changed the riders' costs as the year goes on. I actually had that comment from one Papa Tham who writes into us all the time. If the riders' value was adjusted as the year went on. So let's say somebody gets hurt, or their results aren't what they expected, or they're far above what they were running before. Now, that being said, if somebody makes some really good choices at the beginning of the year and then they start getting adjusted out of their range, I guess they'd have to grandfather it in, and it would get overly complex because people often forget to make changes at the transfer windows, et cetera, et cetera.
No, it's fine. Well, they do this in some of the football fantasy leagues. Doing the Premier League. When I say football, I mean proper football, soccer, as you guys would call it. But sorry, that was a very condescending way of saying proper football. No, you know what I mean. Normal football.
Yeah.
Not weird, padded, throw things around football. And what they do is if you pick your team, if their value goes up and your total team value exceeds what you're allowed, that's fine, provided when you purchased them, it was below.
I see.
But if you get rid of them, and then later on try and get them back, then they're at the new value.
Right.
So that the value they have when you select them, and it can't be that difficult for some computer geek to write. I mean, some of these guys really understand computers rather than just turn it off, turn it on and see if it's fixed itself, which is all I ever do. But, you know, so say Sylvain Guintoli, he's 1.5 million at the moment. Say he wins the first six races, and they say, right, he's now worth 2.3. You think, okay, that's brilliant. But so long as you bought him when he was 1.5, you're fine. Anyone trying to pick him subsequently, they have to pay the new price.
Yeah.
And looking down, that's the other pairing that I think is going to be really interesting. It's Hopper and Leon Camier. John Hopkins and Leon Camier on the Suzuki. And have you seen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty.
The color scheme for Crescent. It is proper GSXR blue and white stripes. Oh my god, it's gorgeous.
Well, you know why? Because it's got the Yoshi influence. So
yeah,
and they've got a nice big Yoshimura sticker on there that looks great with a Yoshi pipe. I'm really looking forward to seeing how that team goes. It will be interesting, and the test will be very, very telling. Both riders obviously have spent time at Phillip Island, plenty of time there. So that should be pretty cool. We can't talk about the Fantasy League too much right now, but we go into it in a very geeky sort of way, but I don't think we should. You did mention that Ant West is looking like he's going to be running BSB this year. Is that for certain now?
No, it's not for certain, but he was tipping himself that he's had a look at the league and he's had a look at the offers, and he's really been impressed with how professional and competitive the teams are. And he's saying, hey, you know, who knows, maybe I could end up there. So, but that was tweeted on his own personal account. So,
and actually, I think Ian Wheeler, Ian, you're getting a lot of mentions, and it's not because you said that you're now a MotoPod convert. But I remember him saying at some point that he'd talked to Ant and that he was in the UK and he was going to leave it at that. So we shall see what happens. But definitely when it comes to the Fantasy League, you have to pay attention right up until the deadline, because things can change that quickly. Martin, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
All right. I want to thank everybody out there in Motopod land for listening to the show. As always, if you'd like to join us in the chat during the midweek or in off times, and somebody's there, usually there 24/7, join us at facebook.com/motopod. You can also send us email through the Facebook fan page, the Facebook. Well, you could do it there too, actually, through motopodcast.com, which is where the shows are downloadable. Also available on iTunes, Zoom, who knows where else. It's pretty much everywhere. Did pick up another 300 fans in Facebook over the last week. I was kind of impressed with that. And that's enough back padding. Martin,
and I'm still 40 away from my 500 on Twitter. So at MotopodMartin.
I'm edging up on 2,000. I'm not even trying.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's sickening.
It must be the sparkling personality in my submarine at the bottom of a pool. And everybody knows who's that for.
Yeah.
All right. We're out of here. Hope you guys have a great week. Look forward to seeing what we see with the testing going on. Next week should be a really fun show. We'll see who we can bring you. In the meantime, au revoir, adios, and ciao.
Good night, everybody.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.